Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Chris Casey. He combines a degree in economics from the University of Illinois with a specialty in the Austrian School of Economics. He advises clients on their investment portfolios in today's world of significant economic and financial intervention. He's also written a number of publications on websites, including the Ludwig von Mises Institute, Zero Hedge, Family Business, Casey Research, and Laissez-Faire Books. And he's a board member of the Economics Development Council with the University of Illinois, a policy advisor for Heartland Institute's Center on Finance, Insurance, and Real Estate. Welcome, Chris.
Richard, thanks for having me on today.
Great. Today we wanted to discuss an approach to investing that uses the principles of the Austrian School of Economics. Chris takes that approach with his clients, and we just wanted to explore more in detail how he does that and how it gives an edge to investing. Chris?
Sure, Richard. Well, anyone's portfolio has exposure to two very significant and primary forces, and that is the business cycle, in that recessions could pop any kind of financial bubbles out there, whether it's the stock or bond markets, as well as inflation, although that's not talked about in today's circles as often as it should be. It's certainly a significant threat to anyone's portfolio, as anyone who lived through the 70s certainly witnessed. And the Austrian school has unique explanations for both of those economic phenomena, as well as interest rates, which are closely related to both of those. So having a unique economic perspective, truly understanding the way the world works, and truly being able to interpret the repercussions of various economic actors within the economy, whether it's the Federal Reserve, whether it's other central banks, whether it's just the Treasury issuing bonds, et cetera, is, I think, really key to structuring one's portfolio to protect yourself from these significant threats that are out there.
And how do you apply this process? Is it sort of like a flowchart-based approach? Do you look for certain characteristics, or do you look at the macro view first from that economics perspective? How do you actually approach that?
Well, we're always trying to interpret what the true effects and repercussions of, for instance, Federal Reserve actions would be on the economy. So, for instance, while some people may believe that raising rates will stifle inflation, we realize that that's one of but several tools that the Federal Reserve uses to inject money into the economy, and therefore it really doesn't have much of a significant nor does it happen right away relative to other tools at their disposal. So it's really an interpretation of actions that are out there. And it lends itself naturally to contrarian investing, because contrarian investing, I've always thought, is a great way to truly make money in any market. And so contrarian investing, you're looking at any kind of price levels that are extreme highs or extreme lows. And then but just as importantly is that you have to look at a catalyst to bring those extreme price levels to their median or mean average over time. And if you have a catalyst that is out there, meaning an interpretation, a true interpretation of how the economy works, and you understand it, but everyone else believes in something different, even though you're looking at the same data, I think that's a significant advantage for anyone in structuring their portfolios.
Yeah, that's right. The Austrian view places a strong emphasis on how interventionary type policies are distorting the price of risk, the price of money, interest rates. So that would make sense very strongly. And do you do this on a daily basis? Like, do you monitor central bank policies, fiscal stimulus policies, government regulations? How do you monitor what's happening and the potential distortionary effects in the investment environment?
Sure. We're looking at the same data everyone else is. It's not like we have some special insider or we're necessarily looking at different data. It's really the interpretation of the data. And let me give you a couple examples, I guess. You know, the Federal Reserve, a lot of people, a lot of mainstream wealth management firms, a lot of media, a lot of people within the finance industry take a lot of stock in what the Federal Reserve believes and does and says. And so, which astounds me because they're the absolute worst predictors of future events of any prognosticator out there. And think about it like this. It's one thing if you're wrong about predicting the future, but the Federal Reserve is even wrong about predicting their own actions. I mean, how many people can you say that, or economic actors can you say, are simply wrong about predicting what they will do in the future? And yet, time and time again, they are. And, you know, if you look at the Federal Reserve, you could look at previous pronouncements. You have Ben Bernanke in, you know, January of 2008 saying they don't see any kind of recession. You know, famously, he did the same with the housing bubble. I don't know why anyone believes these people on anything that they believe will happen to the economy. And it's not because, I mean, they have obviously more access to data than we do. It's simply the interpretation of what's going on. They simply have an unsound and fundamentally flawed understanding as to what causes recessions. They cannot explain a business cycle. And if you cannot explain the root causes as to why something happens, then predicting when something will happen is no different than reading tea leaves. I mean, if historically, if you look back, I remember stories about Alan Greenspan, who would literally sit in his bathtub and just pore over economic data, whether it's, you know, steel production, what have you, trying to discern whether or not we're going to fall off a cliff or into this kind of economic recession. Well, and he should know better, especially because he's familiar with the Austrian school's concepts. But the whole point is that it's a different interpretation. It's a different lens on the same data that's out there.
Can you provide some examples of specific examples of investment asset classes and how they're sort of tied in to an Austrian school of economics view?
Well, the one everyone always talks to, of course, precious metals. And that's because they understand the true nature of money, what money represents, what it does not represent. And therefore, they understand the dangers of a fiat currency in today's world in its ability to create inflation. Let me just reiterate what a fiat currency is, because a lot of people just assume it means paper money. It doesn't. Fiat means by force, right? So it's government required use of money. It's legal tender laws and the ability to print money that's unbacked by any kind of commodity. And so we've obviously had that in full blown mode since 1971. And because of that, we experienced significant inflation, obviously, in the 1970s. The Federal Reserve has printed a huge amount of money since the 2008 recession. A lot of people think, well, why haven't we had recession? Or I'm sorry, why haven't we had inflation since then? And there's a couple forces at play. It's not a simple matter of the stock of money goes up and prices go up automatically. There are some deflationary forces to the extent that loans are called in or loans are repaid. There's a deflationary force since we're on a fractional reserve banking. There's time elements. There's a lag. It's very possible that demand for money has gone up, and that's a key element of the price level equation. You know, what is the demand for money? And in times of uncertainty, in times of extreme low growth, and when people are afraid, the demand for money, I'm sure, goes up. And so that's been keeping a damper on inflation as well.
And what types of investments would provide yield and preservation of purchasing power?
Well, in addition to obviously precious metals, I think you want to look at anything where you are being, assuming your home currency is being depreciated, meaning prices are rising. You want to look for any kind of investment or economic activity where you're getting paid in more stable and increasingly valuable foreign currency, and yet you yourself have your costs in dollars. And so let me give you a couple examples that exist in the real world today. In Russia, over the last couple of years, the ruble has fallen tremendously relative to other currencies, especially the U.S. dollar. But if you look at all their commodity producers, if you have an oil company there, they're getting paid in international markets in dollars. Meanwhile, their costs are lower relative to the revenue. Another example would be in Brazil. You have the same thing happening with soybean producers. You know, their costs have fallen dramatically as the real has fallen, and yet they're getting paid on the international market in dollars. And so I think people should look at that and think about what will happen next in the U.S. What could they, how could they position themselves to benefit from any kind of U.S. inflation? And I think U.S. farmland is a good example. Much like Brazil, I think the same thing could happen here. And we saw that in the 1970s when you had the price level essentially double over a 10-year period, and yet farmland prices went up about threefold. So they more than kept pace with inflation, because the more farmers started exporting as dollars became cheaper for foreigners to buy U.S. food products, their real sales went up in real terms. Land values went up in real terms. So that's another way to play inflation, not just a knee-jerk reaction to precious metals, but actually looking at other areas where you can really benefit between the discrepancies in currencies.
What about other investments in agriculture? Does that make sense as well, like agricultural commodities or companies focused in the agriculture sector?
Well, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. So if farmers are doing better, if they're wealthier, if their underlying land values are better, I'm sure that there's a lot of byproducts of that that will do very well. We haven't looked at any in particular. But there's certainly a ton of ancillary services, ancillary products that would do quite well in that scenario.
And given the Austrian School of Economics places a big emphasis on debt, in a negative sense, would it make sense to look at investments where there are businesses with little or no debt, little or no leverage?
I wouldn't say that Austrians necessarily view debt per se negatively. They certainly view the non-repayment of debt negatively, because that affects everyone in the economy. And they're strong believers, obviously, in property rights and contractual obligations.
Yeah.
But they do view government debt extremely negatively for a number of reasons, morally, constitutionally, and just economically. They would advocate, a balanced budget and much lower debt levels to the extent there's no debt overall, which we haven't seen since the time of Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, exactly. And would it be possible for the government to consider some type of migration plan from a Keynesian base to an Austrian based management of the debt? Is that possible, or could that be, proposed perhaps as an evolutionary?
Well, I don't think anyone in government actually subscribes to the Austrian School of Economics, which is unfortunate. But with the thousands of economists at the Fed, very few of them will even be aware of the school, let alone understand or believe in any of its principles. So, I just don't see anyone within the government helping in any significant way migrating economic policies towards an Austrian viewpoint, whether it's debt or anything else.
Mm-hmm. And do you know of any studies or empirical analysis with regard to using the principles of the Austrian School of Economics for investing, how would we know, or are there any past performance studies that indicate taking this approach has advantages and can provide an edge to investing?
I'm not aware of any, and frankly, it'd be very difficult to conduct those. But more importantly, I'm not sure exactly what those results would show, meaning I'm not sure how beneficial someone simply believing in Austrian economics would have an advantage over others. I mean, we use it. We believe it is an advantage. But just knowing about it doesn't necessarily do anything. You have to really act on it. And it's not foolproof either. The Austrian economics will help you identify bubbles. It'll help you identify the catalyst to pop those bubbles. It will tell you about the direction and magnitude of markets, perhaps, but it won't tell you anything necessarily about the timing, or at least that's the trickiest part. Now, in my mind, timing is far less significant when you have those other attributes nailed down, because you're literally, to use the phrase, Otherwise, you're picking up nickels in front of a steamroller. So I'm not aware of any studies that would be interesting down the road. It's also a pretty small data set, right, of people who actually believe in this, espouse it, and act on it.
And given the level of government intervention, central bank policies that intervene in the economy and in the investment environment on a long-term basis, how does one address the challenge of timing, as you just mentioned? Is it a matter of waiting a certain period of time, or are there tipping points where the distortions have just become too large, and there'll be a reversion to the mean, or contrarian type based approach? How do you actually look at the timing challenge?
Well, I do believe that the direction of magnitude are more important. Let me give you an example. Since 2008, by the way, was a horrendous time. You had really businesses thinking about where do they have their cash and whether or not it's even safe at a bank. And that's how fearful they were. And the unemployment rate literally shot up within 7 to 8 months to 10% from maybe it was a high 4, I think, in early 2008. So you cannot understate the severity of that recession. Now, from that, the government or the Federal Reserve and the Treasury did exactly what they should not have done, right? They should have let these liquidations happen. They should have let this recession run its course. But instead, they did everything wrong. They printed a lot of money. They ran huge deficits. And all they did was cause dramatic and increased distortions in the economy. So make no mistake about it. What happened in 2008, while devastating, could be dwarfed by what comes down the pike based on what's happened, because the distortions are even greater. And the longer this has gone on, since it's been quite some time since the last recession, the greater the distortions are allowed to run their course. And the more severe will be the contraction, the beneficial time period when we restore the structure of production how it should be. So timing to me just isn't as important as magnitude and direction.
I see, yeah. So given what's happening in the economy and what's happening with central bank policies, not only with the Central Bank of the U.S., the Federal Reserve, but other central banks around the world, as well as government policies on fiscal stimulus, the potential for increased infrastructure spending, given that, and from an Austrian school perspective, where do you see the asset classes preferable to be in over the next 6 to 12 months, 1 to 2 year period?
Well, perhaps more importantly, is to what you should be in is what you should not be in. And, I'd mentioned some things that you could consider, obviously precious metals. I think everyone should start looking at cryptocurrencies in some form. Emerging markets are very tempting based on not only the disparity in values between currencies, but based on the disparity in relative values between their markets. Farmland, as I mentioned, I think is attractive. There's certain, one-off sectors that have nothing to do with the economy, which should do well regardless as to what happens. So, for instance, uranium or cannabis, for that matter. But more importantly, as I said, than these areas that one may want to consider are areas that you should avoid. And certainly anything within the equity markets that's highly overvalued based on historical norms, I think people should think about not having in their portfolio. Certainly, any kind of debt instruments are potentially at risk with rising interest rates, so you may want to lighten up on those. So in general, those are some themes to embrace or consider, as well as to what to avoid.
Great. And how can our listeners learn more about your work and your services?
Yeah, and more importantly even than that is really what we believe in and how we apply Austrian economics. And we have a lot of content on our website. I would just encourage people to check out our website, which is windrockwealth.com. And certainly our contact information is on there as well.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll be posting this podcast as well as a number of charts and graphs that Chris will be providing on the website. We'll do also a write-up, abstract transcript of this interview for anyone who wants to read that, including the charts and graphs. Thank you very much, Chris. Great discussion.
Thank you, Richard.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.